welcome to Progressive News Network Sunday Show. I'm Janine Mala, the producer and host. Well, we've got a couple of really, I won't say unusual, but really odd things to discuss today. You know, as you know, this past week, the alleged conservatives on the Supreme Court decided that even though Donald Trump was declared an insurrectionist by the Colorado Supreme Court, Colorado, as well as other states, cannot remove him from the ballot consideration using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Now, keep in mind, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment was brought about after the, well, actually the 14th Amendment was, but Section 3 of the 14th Amendment really was about after the Civil War, and it was to prevent insurrections, in other words, to prevent Confederates from running from office, because, you know, and it makes sense because, you know, they committed treason against the United States. Why in the world would we want them to be officers in the United States? But so we're going to be talking about that. And really, it's more than just this one case, which is the Anderson case. This is really talking about the treachery of conservatives. I don't even want to call them conservatives. The treachery of Republican judges on the Supreme Court. Okay, there's no other way to put it. Those six have decided long since that they are going to do what the rich and powerful want them to do, and to hell with rule of law. They made a mockery of it. And actually, this isn't the first time in the history of the Supreme Court that we've had reprobate judges. That's the other thing. You don't have to look any further than the notorious Dred Scott decision to see that, you know, the Supreme Court has rarely defended constitutional rights, okay, with the exception of the time that Thurgood Marshall was on the court. It's sad, but it's true. And actually, it shouldn't be sad. It shouldn't make people sad. It shouldn't make people frightened. It should make them angry. So apparently, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, according to the six Republican judges on the Supreme Court, doesn't apply to presidents who openly commit insurrection. But that's not the end of this mockery, as the Trump claim of absolute immunity for presidents comes next, because the court's going to hear that case. Now, both of these cases deal with the fraud that I call originalism, and that's a doctrine that reduces the rule of law and the rule of constitutional law to a grocery list concrete enough to please any Asperger's voter. So we're going to be talking about that. We also have a new deplorable of the week and a jackass of the week award, and we will have a couple of musical stylings from Randy Rainbow. In addition to that, we have a second story, and hopefully my voice will hold up, about new progress on the whole Ukraine thing, all right? Not in Congress, but Putin's right-hand man, Medvedev, produced a new map of Russia, which incorporated not only Ukraine, the two NATO countries, namely Poland and Romania. Now, if that's not a open declaration of the intent to commit war and invade, I don't know what is. And that's a story that hasn't, it's been in the news, but it hasn't been talked about very much, and it should be. You know, bottom line is, and I'm not a warmonger at all, but if Ukraine falls, the rest of Europe is next. And there will be a world war. So we can either help Ukraine fight by sending weaponry and other supplies, or we're going to be pulled into the fight. Because, again, NATO is something we signed onto it. If one is in danger, all are in danger, and we're obligated to help. And NATO is not something that any one president can unilaterally pull us out of. That's not the law. So that's our show for today. And now let's go on with it. Hopefully my voice will hold up. Okay. So story number one deals with the Supreme Court, or otherwise known as the SCOTUS. For those of you that are unfamiliar, The acronym SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, or SCOTUS. So what keeps the Republican SCOTUS judges from suddenly stripping every civil right of ours out of the Constitution? Is it due to this respect they have for precedent or respect for rule of law and the idea of democracy? No, not at all. The only thing that keeps SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, in check is that they're really a little bit afraid of public opinion, especially if public opinion turns into action. Now, keep in mind, the Supreme Court is a group of unelected judges that sit on the court for a life term. There are no ethical demands or requirements made on them as there are on other judges. There's no mandatory code of ethics with legal remedies if a judge does something unethical. There just isn't. Now, recently, the Supreme Court came up with their own, it was like a suggestion of ethical behavior. It's hogwash, all right? There was no, they said, here is our code of ethics, but there was no enforcement mechanism. Okay, it's as if both the liberal and both Democrat and the Republican judges in the court think everybody's stupid but them. Now, so that's a big part of it. So basically, the Supreme Court is essentially, they're essentially judicial monarchs, or at least judicial aristocracy. You can call them high priests or priestesses of the magic words. Words that, in terms of legal, in terms of actual legal meaning, are so special that only these judges can know their true meaning. To which my response is, bullshit. We're going to start, first source that I have here backs up a little bit, and it comes from The Guardian. And it's not with those specific cases, but it just is an overall article about how the Supreme Court, according to this author, you know, kind of hijacked American democracy. In fact, that's the headline of this article by Maura Dunnigan. The U.S. Supreme Court has hijacked American democracy, and it ran this past July. Okay, and I need to make this bigger because I can't see it. Oh, yeah. Okay, so, you know, the article says, how much do the Supreme Court's six Republican justices care about what Americans think of them? The question haunts most accounts of the Supreme Court, an anxious subtext detectable in every discussion among court watchers and pundits when the court agrees to hear a specific case and after every oral argument. The article goes on to say, quote, there is a safe assumption born out in the conservative supermajority's decisions, in their statements, and in their pre-court careers, that they are all personally inclined to take the maximalist conservative route. If they were unconstrained by other factors like public opinion and the legitimacy of the court, one gets the distinct sense that they would do the worst thing possible, namely, quote, reverse the most social progress, cause the most suffering, undermine democratic representation as much as possible, and accrue as much political power as they can to themselves. It goes on to say, quote, what stops them or slows, and reading straight from the article, quote, what stops them or slows them down is not an instinct for moderation or a sense of respect for the other branches or the law. What slows them down is a caution about public opinion, a fear of what will happen if their institution is delegitimized in the minds of the people. What slows them down, that is something like shame, end quote. Now, I'm not sure I agree with this author on that one. Boy, I wasn't coughing before. I agree with this author up to a point. I think what slows down the court, especially, I won't call them conservatives, I'm going to call them Republicans, okay, is that they don't want to be slapped down by another branch of government. Now, keep in mind, the Supreme Court, there is mention of the judiciary in the Constitution, but there's no actual mention of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court kind of created itself and decided that they would decide what laws are constitutional and what weren't, and that started with Marbury v. Madison. So basically, there was no constitutional grant of power to a Supreme Court, per se. There just wasn't, much less a grant of the Supreme Court saying they would decide what is constitutional and what is not. You know, we could probably do the same thing in federal courts. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. But, you know, you've got these hypocrites, these Republicans on the court, and there are some people that would say, well, Janine, you know, you just hate Republicans. And I would go, well, yeah, you're right. I do hate Republicans. You know, I never liked them much. Now I truly hate and despise them. I won't even hide that fact. But I hate them because historically they attack democratic rule. Historically, they attack equal rights for all people and so on and so forth. I have a reason for the hatred. And the Republicans on the Supreme Court now have not disappointed in terms of my estimation. Okay, even John Roberts, who's the Chief Justice. Now, John Roberts has been heralded as the great moderate on the court. And to that I say, oh, bullshit. If I wasn't clear, I said bullshit, okay? John Roberts is no moderate whatsoever. He does a good job trying to play one on TV, as the saying goes, but he's not. You know, the fact is John Roberts has made destroying or dismantling the 1965 Voting Rights Act his life's work, and he pretty much accomplished it, you know, especially with the Shelby case. You know, he, you know, during his tenure, the Voting Rights Act was the two things that made it effective have been pretty much destroyed. One is preclearance, and the other is private right to sue, Section 2. You know, and once again, you know, John Roberts, when he got rid of preclearance, you know, preclearance was this idea that Southern states during Jim Crow were so dishonest that they could not be trusted to play it straight. So if any Southern state under the 1965 Voting Rights Act wanted to change their voting policies, they would have to get it cleared in advance, thus pre-clearance, cleared in advance from the feds, or they couldn't do it, no matter how minuscule that change was. Okay? And John Roberts in the Shelby case basically said, well, that may have been true during Jim Crow because there was racism, but, you know, now, you know, we've elected a black man president. So John Roberts reasoned that, you know, he didn't think racism existed anymore because he didn't see it. I kid you not. Okay. You know, we've seen the court basically overrule Roe v. Wade in the Dobbs decision. Okay. And we've also seen how not only the court has really wandered into legislating instead of judging. Okay. But then there's the issue of judicial ethics. You know, you have, for instance, Clarence Thomas. He's had a decades-long relationship with billionaire mega donor Harlan Crow. Okay. You know, basically he's accepted bribes. Now, I realize that because of the Citizens United decision, bribery is technically legal, at least for elected officials, not necessarily, not for judges, though. But it shouldn't be. And, you know, he's basically accepted all sorts of gifts from Harlan Crow, you know, including buying buying his mother's home and renovating it and letting her live there rent-free, educating Thomas's nephew to pricey private school, you know, and so on, lavish vacations, and so on and so forth. And a lot of times a new gift would pop up right before a big decision, big case was coming that Harlan Crow had an interest in, okay? If you or I pulled that kind of crap, we would have been fired, and we would have been facing criminal charges of influence peddling. There's no guesswork here. You have Justice Alito, another hypocrite. You know, he took a luxury fishing trip paid for by billionaire Republican donor Paul Singer. And Singer's had a lot of interest before the court. You have to realize, Paul Singer is the vulture capitalist that journalist Greg Palast has reported on quite a bit. You know, once again, you basically have justices that are on the take. Let's just be honest about it. Okay? Excuse me. And so when these stories, and I think the first stories about these this graft, if you will, that these Republican judges have accepted from, not only from donors, they've accepted gifts from donors who had cases coming before the court, the Supreme Court, in due time. Looks like a bribe to me. And a lot of that, a lot of those stories really aired first from ProPublica, God bless them. And so because of that, the Senate Judiciary Committee, you know, basically sent a letter asking these justices to explain the gifts, and the way these judges have failed to disclose or refuse to disclose these gifts. And so, you know, according to the New York Times, Chief Justice John Roberts rejected the oversight power of Congress. And according to, you know, this this article in The Guardian, quote, when asked to appear before the Senate Judiciary Committee to explain these gifts and the subsequent failures of disclosure and refusal, Chief Justice John Roberts rejected Congress's oversight power, writing a curt letter telling the Senate to go kick rocks. Okay, end quote. And this is illegitimate. So now, you know, we have this case that they just decided about Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, basically kicking people that are kicking insurrectionists off the ballot and preventing them from ever holding office. Now, keep in mind, there's plenty of legal scholars, you know, including J. Michael Luttig and, oh God, I can't remember the other guy's name, but top guys, you know, basically saying that the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment does appear to be self-executing. In other words, nowhere in that document does it say you have to be convicted of insurrection. If it looks like you've committed insurrection, that's it. Okay, it's pretty clear. But leave it to the Supreme Court to twist it in all sorts of obtuse knots. You know, and this is what we're dealing with now, and you have to wonder, well, you know, why? You know, the 14th Amendment is something Republicans have hated for a long time because it called out the Confederates. And make no mistake about it, today's Republican Party, especially the most racist aspects of it, they are basically neo-Confederates. You know, people that are afraid that, oh, gosh, you know, we're heading towards civil war. I say, no, we're not. No, that's not correct. I would say that the Civil War never truly ended. It just morphed into something else. But it's been continuing to the present day. Okay, that would be my issue. And so, you know, we've got this instance where the court, and I agree with this writer, the court has hijacked American democracy. And I think that there must be a written code of ethics that is legally binding for Supreme Court justices the same way it would be for any other judge. That's it. I also believe that Joe Biden needs to expand the court quickly. All right, that would end the tyranny of these six. Make no mistake about it. You know, those of you that, and I know I'm rambling a little right now, but those of you who think the presidential elections aren't important, all you have to look, you don't look any further than the six Republicans on the Supreme Court to see the damage they have caused to democracy itself. Yes, the presidential elections do matter. You know, you don't have to like the Democrat, but understand Democrats aren't going to offer up, you know, Confederates for the Supreme Court. Okay? Democrats aren't going to want to strip women and the LGBTQ community of their human rights. When we're talking about constitutional rights, what we're really talking about is human rights. So there's another article here, and this is, the source is France24.com, and basically it was written about a week ago. when this first happened. The headline is U.S. Supreme Court unanimously rules Trump can remain on 2024 ballot. Now, this is the part that really ticks me off, because the three alleged liberals on the court, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Brown Jackson, they went along with this crap. Now, this is getting into the whole idea of originalism, all right? Personally, I agree with legal expert Ellie Mistal, who writes for The Nation. I don't give a damn about originalism. I think it's cockamamie. I don't want to be held to the limitations of what some white, rich dudes wrote over 200 years ago. Society's changed. Because the originalist viewpoint, if you track it to its logical beginnings, nobody would have rights except white Christian males that own property. It's ridiculous. But this is the article, and you know, basically, you know, a week ago, the court ruled unanimously that Trump the monster can stay on presidential primary ballots. Okay. And this is a piece by Newswires. So it's also very telling that this ruling came down a day before the Super Tuesday primaries. Wow. So it shows the court can move fast when it wants to. I wonder what kind of bribes the Republicans in the court took for this one. I begin to wonder if about a few of the liberals too. Or are they just frightened? I don't know what. So, this article, so I'll just read from the article. It says, quote, the justices ruled a day before the Super Tuesday primaries that states cannot invoke a post-Civil War constitutional provision to keep presidential candidates from appearing on ballots. That power resides with Congress, the court wrote in an unsigned opinion, end quote. First of all, show me how this resides with Congress. It doesn't say that in the 14th Amendment at all. That's the decision that they made. And then an unsigned opinion. No, they make an opinion this big. I want all of them to sign off on it. Okay? And, of course, Trump the moron tweeted, big win for America. God, he's stupid. All right. So this outcome basically ends, you know, this outcome basically demands them that now Colorado, Illinois, Maine, and anywhere else where they wanted to kick Trump off the ballot, they got to put him back on. Okay? According to this article, quote, Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold expressed disappointment in the court's decision as she acknowledged that, quote, Donald Trump is an eligible candidate on Colorado's 2024 presidential primary, end quote. And this is a travesty. Okay? There is plenty of evidence to show that Donald Trump not only committed insurrection, he was in on the planning, and he was ordering things. He didn't care if people got killed. You know, this is leading into the absolute immunity claim, which would set up a dictatorship. You know, Trump has already claimed that, well, presidents have to have absolute immunity or you can't get anything done. You know who says make statements like that? Criminals. There's plenty of elected officials that are able to get the job done without breaking the law. Period. This is nothing more than Republicans wanting a get out of jail free card for committing all sorts of crimes now and in the future. Okay? Now, Trump's case was the first at the Supreme Court dealing with Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It was adopted after the Civil War. And the idea was to prevent Confederates who obviously engaged in insurrection from holding office ever again. You know, Colorado Supreme Court held that, you know, he committed insurrection. He can't be on the ballot. But don't you know, the Supreme Court decided otherwise. Now, while it's true that all nine judges, it was a unanimous decision, agreed that Trump should be on the ballot, there was some disagreement from the three liberal members, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Jackson. And then a disagreement from Amy Coney Barrett, not quite as strong. They thought that their other colleagues went too far in deciding what Congress has to do to disqualify someone from federal office, not just presidents, but someone. Okay? So all those insurrectionists in Congress, we can't disqualify them now either. Isn't that really convenient? So according to this article, it says here, quote, Justices Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson said they agreed that allowing the Colorado decision to stand could create, quote, a chaotic state by state, I'm sorry, could create, quote, a chaotic state by state patchwork, end quote, but said they disagree with the majority's finding of a disqualification for insurrection, finding that a disqualification for insurrection can only happen when Congress enacts legislation. Quote, in doing so, the majority shuts the door on other potential means of federal enforcement. We cannot join an opinion that decides momentous and difficult issues unnecessarily, and we therefore concur only in the judgment, end quote, they wrote. So the excuse from the three liberals was, well, you know what, we can't disqualify Trump from the ballot using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, because if we did that, there would be, quote, a chaotic state-by-state patchwork. And my response is, so what? Democracy's messy. Those of you that claim, well, we're not a democracy, we're a republic. Doofus, a republic's a form of a democracy. Learn some vocabulary. Jeez. And democracy, whether it's a republic or a direct democracy, is messy. So what? We already have a chaotic state-by-state patchwork because every state has different, slightly different rules and regulations regarding voting. So what are these three alleged liberals talking about? The chaotic state-by-state patchwork is already well established. So, you know, that almost looks like a judicial dog ate my homework nonsense. Okay. And then, you know, the court basically said that Congress they can't disqualify someone for insurrection, someone, not just president, only when Congress enacts legislation. It doesn't say that in the Constitution. There's no need for Congress to enact legislation. Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is quite clear. You know, and yet these brilliant justices can't seem to understand that. And so I'm going to go to it. Give me a second here. I'm going to read it exactly. Give me a minute. Here it is, from congress.gov, Constitution annotated. 14th Amendment, Section 3, word for word is what it says. Quote, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution of the United States shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of two-thirds of each house, remove such disability. That remove such disability means that if somebody were actually kicked off a ballot, are thrown out of office because they were guilty of insurrection, Congress could, by a vote of two-thirds, bring them back, say, no, you're back in. Nowhere does it say, however, that Congress must enact a law to specific legislation in order to use Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. So it appears that both Republicans and Democrats on the Supreme Court are originalists when it's convenient for them. But if you looked at this as a textualist or an originalist, this does not require Congress to write legislation to kick somebody off the ballot or to kick them out of office if they commit insurrection or give aid or comfort. It doesn't require it. The only thing it talks about is that they could be brought back into office by a two-thirds vote of each house, period. That's it. And if you notice in that long sentence, okay, you see that phrase, or hold any office, any. That would include all, any and all. But apparently that's not the case for the Supreme Court. Now, according to this article, this is the most direct involvement the SCOTUS has had in the presidential election since the travesty of Bush v. Gore. Okay? We'll talk about that another time. But, you know, once again, more often than not, throughout the history of the United States Supreme Court, you will find that the judges on the SCOTUS, rather than actually interpret the law as it's written, they wheedle and connive and stretch it to fit what they want it to fit. See, you can't say you're an originalist and then make shit up. And that's what they did. That's all. Of course, I've always argued that the way law is practiced here and everywhere, the law should be written in plain language, not in legalese. And it should be written so that the average high school graduate can clearly understand it. No small print, nothing. So, excuse me. Once again, this is what we're dealing with here. And what's really frightening about this is that this is the prelude. The next step is the nonsense absolute immunity garbage. Okay? Notice in both this case on the Section 3 of the 14th Amendment and then again in the absolute immunity case, the federal appeals court basically, you know, they committed themselves the way they're supposed to. And the Supreme Court just turned it on its ear. Make no mistake about it. I mean, I'm tired of hearing about, you know, oh gosh, you know, the liberal judges, they can be tough. When? Okay, they're arguing technicalities and forgetting about the spirit of the law. Article 3 of the 14th, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment was intended to keep traitors, insurrectionists, out of office, period. Trump's a traitor. It's not rocket science. The whole world saw on January 6th. You know, what does it take to get these cowards to do their damn job? Okay? You got to wonder if the judges are being threatened by somebody. You just do. Okay? I really, even though they've been in the ivory tower so long, they don't understand that their pronouncements affect people in very real ways. I don't know, but I think we need some reform of the court. Okay, so now we have another article here. This is from the National Constitution Center. And again, this was written March 4th by Scott Bomboy. And the headline is, the Supreme Court's mixed opinion in Trump's Colorado case. Okay. Now, the Supreme Court gave a unanimous decision, and it blocked states from removing Trump from primary election ballots. Okay. But four justices, namely the three alleged liberals, I'm not going to call them liberals, I don't think they are, but Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, as well as Amy Coney Barrett, the four women on the court, quote, raised questions about how a ban on insurrectionists could be handled in the future, okay, end quote. And the case was Trump v. Anderson. And it's, you know, we know it appealed the Colorado Supreme Court ruling that permitted disqualifying Trump using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Okay. Again, the per curiam opinion. So according to this article, we're getting into a little more. Supreme Court's opinion addressed several questions. quote, there was unanimous agreement that states did not have a role in disqualifying federal officeholders and candidates. A direct quote from the opinion, quote, we conclude that states may disqualify persons holding or attempting to hold state office, but states have no power under the Constitution to enforce Section 3 with respect to federal offices, especially the presidency, end quote. Okay, I'm disagreeing with that. If states have the right to determine their own federal, how they're going to run their own federal elections and how they're going to sign electors, then why can't Section 3 of the 14th Amendment also apply? Okay, this was a power grab. Make no mistake about it. The Supreme Court took power away from the states and gave it to the United States Congress. Make no mistake about it. And why? To accommodate that liar, that traitor, Donald Trump. Now, Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson concurred only in the judgment. Okay? In other words, they believed that Colorado by itself could not disqualify Trump. And the quote from the actual opinion, quote, allowing Colorado to do so, would we agree, create a chaotic state-by-state patchwork, there you go, at odds with our nation's federalism principles, end quote. Okay, the problem is you're talking about our nation's federalism principles, but then you have a state-by-state patchwork of how states run their elections. Which is it? Okay, this is nonsense. We actually need a federal law that not only protects voting rights, but, you know, sanctions that there are certain procedures you have to follow in elections. So the women justices, they cited several occasions an opinion in, quote, U.S. Term Limits v. Thornton from 1975. And the three liberals, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson, thought that, quote, our Constitution leaves some questions to the states while committing others to the federal government. Federalism principles embedded in that constitutional structure decide this case. States cannot use their control over the ballot to undermine the national government, end quote. Wow. This is really, they contradict themselves all over the place. So the justices also, according to this article, disagree, quote, in how the federal government would determine the issue of Section 3 disqualification. I'm just reading from this now. Quote, five majority justices in the unsigned opinion decided that Congress would need to pass legislation to enforce the 14th Amendment's disqualification provisions. And now a line straight from the decision, quote, because the Constitution makes Congress rather than the states responsible for enforcing Section 3 against federal officeholders and candidates, we reverse, end quote. And that's what the justices, five justices, wrote in the opinion second paragraph. Okay? And the five justices, in other words, the conservatives, pointed to, get this, a circuit court decision from 1869 from Chief Justice Samuel Chase in the Griffin's case, and also the Colorado Supreme Court's decision requiring a determination, Section 3 applies to a particular person, before the disqualification holds meaning, yada, yada, yada. The decision went on to say, quote, the Constitution empowers Congress to prescribe how this determination should be made. The relevant provision is the 14th Amendment, Section 5, which enables Congress, subject, of course, to judicial review, to pass appropriate legislation to enforce the 14th Amendment, end quote. Don't you just love all the vague language? What constitutes appropriate legislation? Seriously, you know, there's no criterion, it's just that. The concurring opinions, as again, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson disagreed with the majority, and they disagree with the majority because the majority said the court needed, let me back up here. Don't you just hate the way lawyers use double talk? I swear to God, drives me daddy, okay? Quote, Justices Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson disagreed with the majority's ruling that the court needed to decide at this point if the Congress needed to pass legislation to put the disqualification clause into effect. Citing two landmark Supreme Court decisions, Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, the notorious Dobbs decision, and Marbury v. Madison, the three justices argued, quote, the fundamental principle of judicial restraint is practically as old as our republic, end quote. And so the three liberals saw the majority's finding that requiring Congress to pass some sort of legislation as a problem. You know, they argued that among other possible, they were talking about other possible federal actions, such as, quote, when a party is prosecuted by an insurrectionist and raises a defense on that score, and, okay, this is getting very, okay, I got to stop here for a minute. This is crazy. Let me back up here a little bit. So the three liberals, again, quote, saw the majority's finding that, as I said, it was up to Congress to enact legislation pursuant to Section 5 of the 14th Amendment as problematic and closing the door on other potential means of federal enforcement. Okay, so the three liberals, again, are saying, you know, I'm not sure that it's up to Congress to write a piece of and pass a piece of legislation on how insurrectionists will be handled. Okay, this is where people get very frustrated because, once again, you know, the Supreme Court is kind of like a teacher that's grading an essay, all right? And it's the kind of teacher that gets very caught up in the grammar and the punctuation and doesn't give a whit about the actual message, okay? So we've done enough of that. Enough's enough, okay? We're going to talk about it another time. One of the things I want to talk about, originalism, okay? This is our curse. Notice how the court, they're originalists when it's convenient for them. And my issue with originalism is that we're being held to decisions made over 200 years ago, closer to 300 years ago, by a bunch of white male slaveholders. It has no relevance to us today. And if we're talking about justice, because courts are supposed to deal with justice, right, we should be talking about fairness. Now, Merriam-Webster defines fairness as, quote, marked by impartiality and honesty, free from self-interest, prejudice, or favoritism, end quote. Okay. Now, ironically, the Supreme Court never got that memo. Right now, under the rubric of originalism, this court decided that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment does not apply to presidents or presidential candidates unless, of course, there's an act of a new piece of legislation that Congress passes. And I presume that if that's the case, a president would have to sign off on it. And do you really think a criminal president like Trump would sign off on something like that if it affected him? Of course not. Now, that was bad enough, but the court also decided that individual states do not have the jurisdiction to disqualify any insurrectionist candidate for any federal office. Now, we don't know if that applies to state offices or not. The court majority granted that power solely to the U.S. Congress. So when you look at originalism as a whole, you know, you have to ask yourself some questions. Like, for instance, what is the rollback of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe, future challenges to gay marriage, the right to use contraception, the right to privacy itself, all have in common? And they do have something in common. The answer is what I call the pseudo, in other words, fake, the pseudo-judicial theory of constitutional originalism and its incestuous, litigious cousin, textualism. Now, for clarity, I'm going to use the term originalism to reference both doctrines under that, you know, ersatz semantic umbrella. Now, originalism claims that the rights espoused in the U.S. Constitution are limited solely to those same rights listed in the original document. Now, they totally ignore the Ninth Amendment, which contradicts that intellectually bankrupt theory. That's another day. Originalism is this cynical judicial farce employed to deny equal rights to groups and individuals previously left out of the Constitution's empty promises of human rights. It's the judicial equivalent, in my opinion, originalism is the judicial equivalent of religious literalism or fundamentalism. And think of that, originalism is judicial fundamentalism. There is no nuance. Now, originalist proponents are going to shriek foul to this assignation of judicial tyranny, claiming there is a process for expanding human rights. Yeah, kind of. You know, what they nakedly omit is the single, you know, inconvenient truth, namely that the process they extol is not reasonably available to the very same groups who have been historically denied their human rights. As such, originalism is a formula engineered to maintain an unjust status quo, which originally granted rights solely to rich white men who own property. Now, while it's true that other groups are granted suffrage eventually, such as black men followed by all women, the process to expand rights to minorities and women was unduly long, arduous, and often bloody. These groups were admonished and lectured by the Supreme Court, which required them to obtain political support from their very oppressors. Think about what I'm saying. We had to seek emancipation from our previous oppressors. Now, that's not insulting enough. Taking their clues from litigious charlatans of the day, today's Supreme Court openly brandishes the garbage judicial theory of history and tradition as a legitimate component of equal justice. Now, as long as this claim is obvious to even a child, how could equal justice be rendered to historically oppressed groups such as racial and religious minorities, women, the LGBTQ community, if that same equal justice relies on the history and tradition of a nation that constitutionally sanctions slavery for both blacks and all women and other forms of persecution against these same groups? It wouldn't. That's my point. The history and tradition theory is intended to add not only insult to injury, but also grants the bigots in our society a free pass. The obscene truth is blatant. If a jurist were to remain, a judge, in other words, were to remain true to the originalist doctrine at its most literal level, all grants granted after the Constitution was ratified, then all rights granted after the Constitution was ratified that weren't granted by constitutional amendments could be determined to be null and void. And put bluntly, originalism is a stacked deck. Okay? Now, was I reading from something? Yes, I was reading from a piece I'm writing right now. It's my own work. Another day we're going to go into originalism's tarnished history. It really gained speed under this legal theorist, Robert Bork. Bork was up for the Supreme Court, I think, in the 80s under Reagan. He was turned down. But he was a distinguished law professor from Harvard. He was nominated to the Supreme Court in 87. And I call it, you've been Borked, okay? You know, you talk about a man who, you know, basically was fine using originalism to maintain injustice, to maintain racist structures, to maintain misogynist, sexist structures, to maintain homophobic and transphobic structures, to maintain structures that deny religious minorities the same rights and privileges as Christians. It's all there. It's all there. So, but I wanted to put that in here just to give you an idea. Okay. I'm going to take a little break here. I'll be back in a second. we're back. Okay, we're moving on to story number two. I admit I'm kind of ranting today because I'm so angry. All right, I mean, you know, I expected this from the Republicans on the court, angry at the alleged liberals for their cowardice. I'll just put it there. And, you know, the other night when President Biden gave his State of the Union address, yeah, he kind of bawled out the Supreme Court and looked them straight in the eye, and I was so glad to see that. So glad. You know, the liberals on the court need to get out of their damn ivory tower and see that the law is a tool that affects people's real lives. It is not just this symbolic idea that you restrict to debate teams. Okay? All right, on to the next story. Story number two. This didn't get much play, and it should have. You know, and I know there are people that are progressive, that are anti-war no matter what. I'm not one of them. I don't like war, but I'm not a pacifist either. That's just foolish. I'm sorry. When somebody wants to kill you, you can't just say, let's sing Kumbaya, and this other side will comply. They won't. That's just foolish. So, story number two, Putin threatens to attack Romania and Poland that are both NATO nations. This is a piece from express.co.uk. It's written by Alessandra Scotto di Santolo, World News reporter. The headline reads, Putin's right-hand man unveils new map of Russia with plans. Excuse me. Okay, I'm going to take a break here. I need to get something. I'm sorry. Starting to lose my voice. Okay, take a little medicine there. Sorry, folks. Okay, back to the headline. Story number two. Putin's right-hand man unveils new map of Russia with plans to invade two NATO allies. As I was saying before, I'm not a pacifist. The United States is a member of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. It is there for a reason, to keep Russia from attacking. And our responsibility is if a NATO nation's attacked, we are all attacked then, and we help. That's it. Contrary to what the Republicans say, no president may unilaterally pull us out of NATO. That's not how it works at all. The fact that too many Americans don't understand that is pathetic. Excuse me. That would take an act of Congress and changing the treaty. Okay? Keep in mind, after 9/11, NATO countries came to our aid. As Americans, we don't fully understand that because we've got an ocean dividing us. Okay, so the sub-headline here is Vladimir Putin's mouthpiece claims, quote, Ukraine is definitely Russia, while unveiling a controversial map, heightening concerns over territorial ambitions and raising tensions with neighboring NATO allies. Okay? Both Romania and Poland are NATO nations. Let's face it, Ukraine has been fighting the fight. The rest of Europe didn't want to fight. They had no choice. Okay? So now, we have a real problem. I think Sweden just joined NATO. They weren't going to. They were going to remain neutral. And they saw the handwriting on the wall, as trite as that may sound. So, this article says, quote, Russian Security Council Deputy Chairman Dmitry Medvedev delivered a worrying speech on Monday, claiming that Ukraine is definitely Russia and unveiling a new map that redraws the borders to reflect his vision of a territorially expanded Russia. Medvedev's controversial statements and actions have raised concerns internationally, particularly with regard to the sovereignty of Ukraine, and the potential implications for neighboring NATO allies. I'm just reading straight from the article. Okay. This is a direct quote of Medvedev. Quote, our geostrategic space has been indivisible since the time of the ancient Russian state. And that, he said during his speech, presented a map that depicted the vast majority of Ukraine's territory incorporated into Russia. Medvedev said, quote, this concept must disappear forever. Ukraine is definitely Russia, end quote. And he just dismissed the internationally recognized borders of Ukraine. Medvedev's map didn't stop at Ukraine, quote, as it also showed altered borders for other countries, including Poland and Romania. This aggressive move has heightened tensions in the region, with international leaders expressing deep concern over the potential consequences of Russia's expansionist ambitions, really. Okay. The article goes on to say, quote, the Russian official's rhetoric mirrors his previous comments, where he has consistently questioned Ukraine's right to exist, labeling it as a misconception stemming from the dissolution of the Soviet Union. Medvedev argued, quote, historic parts of the country need to come home. All our adversaries need to understand once and for all a simple fact. The territories on both banks of the Dnipro River are an integral part of Russia's strategic and historical borders, end quote. It doesn't take much imagination to see what he's getting at. Okay? It doesn't take much imagination either to compare Putin to Hitler, at least in terms of the early days of Hitler and territorial, call it expansion, I call it what it's stealing. Okay? All righty. So we also have another article here from Al Jazeera, and this was on the Tucker Carlson interview a little earlier, and it's titled Decoding Putin's Obsessive Ideas in the Tucker Carlson Interview. And just, you know, basically, it was, you know, this Tucker Carlson had this asinine interview with, and, you know, during this talk, according to Al Jazeera, Carlson, you know, he characterized the Russian-Ukraine war as a border dispute, and Tucker Carlson was asking Americans to cut off aid packages to Kyiv, and he compared the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, to a rat and a pimp. Real nice, Tucker. I'm being very sarcastic here. And so, finally, Putin, this is a translation of what Putin said, okay? Putin said, quote, you have issues on the border, issues with migration, issues with the national debt. You have nothing better to do, so should you fight in Ukraine, wouldn't it be better to negotiate with Russia, end quote? And so when Carlson then asked Putin if Putin could just call President Biden to work it out, Putin refused, but said the solution was very simple. Putin said, quote, if you really want to stop fighting, you need to stop supplying weapons. It will be over within a few weeks. That's it. Then we can agree on some terms. Okay. This is not hard to figure out. Putin's just saying, no, I don't want to talk to President Biden, you know, because he can't control Biden. Let's face it. Trump is Putin's bitch, okay? There is plenty of evidence to show in the books by Craig Unger to show that not only do Russian oligarchs, not only have they funneled hundreds of millions of dollars to Trump over the decades, you know, but these oligarchs can't do anything without Putin anyway. So Trump owns him. Now, whether or not he's got some compromat or something to blackmail Trump on, possibly. But let's face it, Trump himself and his family said, we get a lot of our money from Russians. Nothing happens in Russia without Putin's say-so. Vladimir Putin is like the world's richest man, and his riches come from stealing. Make no mistake about it. Those oligarchs don't dare do anything without his say-so. Putin is the dictator of Russia. There's no guesswork here. Okay. So this is something where, you know, Putin during this interview with Tucker Carlson also reiterated some of his old claims that Ukraine is an artificial state, that it was created by Stalin, who annexed areas in Poland, Hungary, and Romania, making them part of Soviet Ukraine. According to the article in Al Jazeera, quote, Putin also suggested that Hungary, whose nationalist helmsman Viktor Orban remains the most pro-Russian leader within the European Union, has the right to, quote, take back its lands, end quote. It goes on to say, quote, an observer compared Putin's intention to those of Nazi dictator Adolf Hitler, who triggered World War II by annexing areas in Eastern Europe that were populated by ethnic Germans. You have a quote here from a professor, Nikolai Mitroykin of Germany's Bremen University, who said, quote, I think the response to his Hitlerism on the part of North American and European elites will resolutely be harsh and will lead to more military aid to Ukraine. He said, here Putin worked for Biden by trying to animate Trump's audience, end quote. So, you know, once again, this is a story that didn't get much play, and it should have. All right, it's obvious that Putin, through his right-hand guy, is saying, we're going to invade Romania and Poland, and we're just going to take it. Now, again, it doesn't take much imagination to see the rest of Europe is next. You know, and this is an instance where, you know, for too long, Americans tend to want to take the attitude that Europe's problems aren't our problems. But Europe's problems are our problems. You know, that ocean separates us with supersonic missiles, not that far away anymore. Just saying. Okay. So I'm going to take a break, and then we're going to move on to our deplorables. And we're back. Okay. We'll be talking more about these court cases in the future, by the way. It's just it all happened so fast. Okay. So let's move on here. Give me a second to get my – oh, it's right there. Okay. First, our deplorables. A little villainous music here. Welcome to PNN Deplorables section. Deplorables of the week. Who is deplorable this week? We're about to find out. And we have multiple deplorables this week. Here we go. Okay. So this week, this is something that didn't get much play either. There is a piece that was written by Tom Hartman, noted journalist, and it was also an alternate. And the deplorables this instance are Republicans in the United States Senate and House. And the piece is titled, How Trump Ends Social Security. And we all need to make some very hostile calls to Congress. This was published just yesterday. So Tom Hartman wrote, quote, want to end Social Security? Just vote for Donald. Oh, excuse me. Let me start again. Quote, want to end Social Security? Just vote for Donald Trump or pretty much any Republican this fall. Every year that Donald Trump was president, he proposed budgets that would have cut Social Security funding and benefits. In 2020, he even campaigned on ending the payroll tax that funds it and Medicare altogether. Let that, end quote. Let that sink in. You end the payroll tax? There is no way to fund Social Security and Medicare because my generation paid for the generation ahead of us, the millennials pay for us, and so on and so forth. So let's go to this by Tom Hartman. God bless him. Quote, I'm just reading from the article. The Republican Study Committee, which claims 175 of the House's 219 Republican members of Congress, released their annual budget proposals last summer, and sure to form, they also called for the setup of draconian cuts to Social Security. Weirdly, the title of the section of their budget that cuts Social Security is titled Preventing Biden's Cuts to Social Security. You hear that? So, again, Republicans proving themselves to be damn liars. Okay? If you're baffled by that because Biden has never called for cuts to Social Security, you live in the reality-based world. But in right-wing land, Social Security is on the verge of collapse and so needs to be gutted for young people, their budget notes. Quoting from this statement from the Republicans, quote, retirement benefits as they are currently structured cost more than the revenue streams that pay for it. The reforms in the RSC budget would not affect benefits for any senior in or near retirement. In other words, quote, the system is going broke and we're going to gut it, but not for the older voters the GOP needs. We'll just stick millennials, Gen Z, and Gen X with the pain, end quote. Now, just when you think it couldn't get worse, Project 2025 is mentioned. Keep in mind, that's the like 900-page right-wing blueprint. And again, also has Social Security targeted, okay? According to Project 2025, they argue, quote, that the law doesn't even need to be changed. The big banks could take over Social Security right now if only the right president were there to push the issue. Okay? Go back here. Again, starting from this Tom Hartman, quote, similarly, Project 2025, the nearly 900-page right-wing blueprint for gutting the American middle class, ending voting rights, imposing Christianity on all Americans, killing public schools, and ending women's abortion and birth control rights, also has Social Security in its crosshairs. Again, reading straight from Tom Hartman's piece. Having been sponsored by billionaires and bankers who've been lusting for decades over the trillions in cash in the Social Security Trust Fund, it makes perfect sense that we contain explicit threats to Social Security. They argued that the law doesn't even need to be changed. The big banks could take over Social Security right now if only the right president were there to push the issue. Keep in mind, there's a reason why government controls it. The big banks can't be trusted. How many of them have robbed? So this is a quote from Project 2025, specifically page 637, and it says the following, quote, the most promising avenue for innovation is to involve workers and private sector organizations more directly, freed from unnecessary bureaucratic strictures. Existing statutory language in the Social Security Act does not prohibit non-public organizations from administering the program, nor does it specifically authorize states to do so, end quote. Page 637, Project 2025. Keep in mind, look what they did to Medicare with Medicare Advantage, or Part C, privatized, and Medicare Advantage, as is ironically called, doesn't pay for things that are routinely covered by traditional Medicare. Okay? Just doesn't. Okay? A lot of doctors are refusing to accept Medicare Advantage because they don't get paid. So once again, this would put us to the tender mercies of the big banksters and the judges, according to Tom Hartman, that they own. Okay? Now, keep in mind, Republicans, and Tom Hartman's the only one to say this, Republicans have been trying to destroy or privatize Social Security ever since Franklin Roosevelt, you know, created it in 1935. You know, these are the guys that they refer to Social Security as a Ponzi scheme, a con, or socialism. Okay? You know, it goes on to say, quote, these days Republicans don't even try to hide their hatred for the socialist program, namely Social Security. For example, in this election year, each of the Republican candidates for president were unabashed in their commitment to destroying Social Security. Nikki Haley said the retirement age of 65 is way too low. You know, she didn't realize Reagan raised it to 67, but she probably thinks 67 is too low. Ramaswamy wanted to fire 75% of the employees in the Social Security Administration, which means, you know, who would process your application. Chris Christie, an alleged moderate, said that Americans need to, quote, deal with Social Security by cutting benefits. DeSantis voted as a congressman three times to raise the retirement age to 70 and privatize the system. Senator Rick Scott met recently with Trump about, you know, possibly replacing Mitch McConnell. He's called for Social Security and Medicare programs to both sunset at the end of 5 years if Congress doesn't write new legislation to keep them alive. That's probably the easiest way to destroy it. I mean, think of how insane that would be. You have laws for programs that people count on. They've paid into it their entire lives. If Congress doesn't write a new law to extend it, it just disappears after 5 years. What I would say to Senator Scott is, you damn well better have every penny that everybody's put into it to refund then with interest. Or you're going to go to jail for fraud. And Trump has always wanted to gut the program. Okay? So, you know, Biden's promise not to cut or reduce benefits. And Senator Bernie Sanders has proposed a new law he calls the Social Security Expansion Act. God bless him. And this program would make Social Security solvent for the next 75 years. Okay? And all it does is it demands the rich pay their fair share. You know, right now, if you make more than, it's been raised a bit, if you make more than $168,600 a year, okay? In other words, if you make a little more than $169,000, you don't have to pay any more into the system, all right? And that's one of the things that's draining, but these millionaires keep claiming theirs. And it's only one-tenth of, it's ridiculous, okay? So a person making $10 million a year pays one-one-hundredth of what the average worker pays. So proportionally, it's nowhere near fair. And according to Tom Hartman, he says, quote, if the morbidly rich were to pay their fair share, the same percentage as everyone else, it would generate so much revenue that every retired person in America could also get a $2,400 a year raise. The key, Sanders says, is to also apply the tax to the forms of income most often received by wealthy people. Capital gains and dividends, which are both currently exempt. Okay? It's perfectly reasonable. It just is. This is not hard to do. It's just making the rich pay their fair share and cutting off the, you know, evasion scams that they employ. Now, there's a list of Democrats that have signed on to Bernie Sanders' bill. In the Senate, the Democrats. Okay, Elizabeth Warren, Jan Schakowsky, Van Hoyle, Sheldon Whitehouse, Jeff Merkley, Chris Van Hollen, Alex Padilla, Kirsten Gillibrand, Cory Booker, Tina Smith, Ed Markey, Alma Adams, Jamal Bowman, Cory Bush, Troy A. Carter, Greg Kassar, Steve Cohen, AOC, Jesus Chi Garcia, Raul Gravala, Sheila Jackson Lee, Pramila Jayapal, Ro Khanna, Rick Larson, Barbara Lee, Stephen F. Lynch, Jim McGovern, Gwen Moore, Gerald Nadler, Grace Napolitano, Eleanor Holmes Norton, Donald M. Payne Jr., Kelly Pingree, Mark Pocan, Jamie Raskin, and Rashida Tlaib. Okay? Not a single Republican. Now, Tom Hartman also tells people, if your representative or senator hasn't signed on to Bernie Sanders' bill to make the rich pay their fair share and save for Social Security, you can call them. The congressional number is 202-224-3121. That's the congressional switchboard. I'll say it again. 202-224-3121. Give them a choice they can't refuse. Seriously, let these bastards know that if they try and destroy Social Security, there's going to be some serious hostility coming their way. Okay? Right now, again, this is an example where qualified immunity needs to stop. Okay? All right, so that is our report on, scroll back up again, sorry, folks. And this is something that's important. You need to pay attention to this. So, once again, sorry. That was our deplorables of the week report. The Republicans continue to be the deplorables. Call 202-224-3121 and give those Republican bastards hell. They want to steal our Social Security, and I do mean steal. Don't let them. Now, we're going to take a little break. Got a few more things going on. Here we go. And we're back. Now, we have two more little treats for you. First, we have our Jackass of the Week Award. And then we have not one, but two musical parodies from our favorite, Randy Rainbow. But first, let's move on with PNN's Jackass of the Week Award. Welcome to Progressive News Network. Jackass of the Week Award! Woo! Rayon, Jack, Rayon. You never sounded more intelligent. Woo! And this time it's a Missouri Jackass, ironically. So this week, our Jackass of the Week Award, he could have received the Deplorable of the Week, too. It's almost like a twofer. And that is Missouri, U.S. Senator from Missouri, Eric Schmidt, or as I fondly call him, Eric Schitt. This is a piece, an alternate by Carl Gibson, GOP Senator, namely Eric Schmidt, I'm sorry. GOP Senator blocks conservative colonel's promotion because he criticized racism in 2020. Now, this has been condemned in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch back in Schmidt's home state of Missouri. Keep in mind, Eric Schmidt never served a day in the military. He was either too indifferent or too cowardly. Never. But he's going to criticize another conservative who has served with honor. So there's this decorated colonel who was in line for a promotion to brigadier general, which is a one-star general. This time it wasn't Tommy Tuberville running opposition. It was Missouri Senator Eric Schmidt. And apparently in the Washington Post, the colonel that was up for promotion is a man named Colonel Ben Johnson. Now, keep in mind, Colonel Johnson worked as chief of staff, according to this article, for the Illinois-based Air Mobility Command, overseeing like 110,000 employees. Also, Colonel Johnson is a graduate of the Air Force Academy, which is difficult in and of itself. And according to the paper, quote, is fluent in Arabic, has 7 air medals, and flew 900 combat hours over Iraq, Afghanistan, and Syria, end quote. And Colonel Johnson is described as, quote, a devout Christian devoted to his biracial family, end quote. And there's a really lovely picture of him and his family. Well, apparently, Colonel Johnson wrote an op-ed, in other words, an editorial that ran in Air Force Times, so apparently it was fine in his military command. In 2020, where he, quote, called on his fellow white colonels to, quote, address our blind spots around race, end quote. Okay? And I assume Colonel Johnson speaking from personal experience because, he has biracial children. And so apparently Eric Schmidt took over for Tommy Tuberville. Okay, now, for Tommy Tuberville, Coach Tuberville, there's at least a little bit of an excuse because he's a moron with practically no education. Eric Schmidt is a licensed attorney. All right. In fact, he was a Missouri Attorney General. He knows better, doesn't care. Okay. But Schmidt issued a statement, and apparently Schmidt exercises right as a senator to individually, quote, object to an appointment. So let me back up here. I'm sorry. So Schmidt got upset with this 2020 op-ed that ran in Air Force Times. Okay, and according to this article, quote, even though Senator Tommy Tuberville of Alabama has since lifted the months-long hold he placed on hundreds of high-ranking military promotions Schmidt exercised his right as a senator to individually object to an appointment, keeping the hold in place for Johnson. Okay? The Post reported that Johnson's promotion has been pending since January of 2023. Now, here's the piece of garbage that Eric Schmidt put out. According to Eric Schmidt, quote, it is long past time to root out divisive DEI policies and their advocates from our apolitical military, end quote. And that's Schmidt's alluding to, you know, the Republicans' crusade against the idea of diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Schmidt went on to say, quote, leaders must emphasize unity of mission and purpose, not our immutable differences. We are to maintain our military as the greatest meritocracy in the world, end quote. Now, what are these divisive DEI policies that Schmidt's talking about? The DEI policies are actually part of official Air Force standard by order of the Secretary, let's see now, I'm clicking on it right now, the source, by order of the Secretary of the Air Force, okay? It's right there, okay? It's a document of some 38 pages that apparently Eric Schmidt's a lawyer that doesn't like to read. Quote, an Air Force document from August of 2023 includes all caps instruction that reads, compliance is mandatory, and goes on to say diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility are key to Air Force standards and missions. Okay? It also goes on to say, quote, diversity of thought, experience, and perspective is critical to innovation and maintaining the Air Force's competitive advantage. End quote, according to the document. The document also goes on to say diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility are about strengthening our force and ensuring our long-term viability to support Air Force missions with dignity and respect, end quote. Now, there's a quote here also from a retired Air Force colonel named Chris Bauman. And Bauman told the Washington Post that Colonel Johnson is, quote, absolutely qualified for promotion. And Colonel Bauman did characterize the obstruction by Eric Schmidt as, quote, politics to serve the anti-woke agenda, end quote. Bauman went on to say, quote, the irony is that the hold is preventing the promotion of a conservative Christ follower who actually takes the teachings of Jesus seriously, who puts his faith into action in a manner that leads to flourishing for everyone he leads, regardless of their faith or race, end quote. Now, excuse me. This op-ed, this editorial that Colonel Johnson wrote that ran in Air Force Times was written, this was during nationwide protest after police murdered George Floyd in Minneapolis and Breonna Taylor in Louisville, Kentucky. And so his op-ed just reminded white colonels that, quote, they set the culture, drive the calendar, and create the policies at most of our installations around the Air Force. His op-ed also went on to say, this is taken straight from Colonel Johnson's op-ed, quote, as white colonels, you and I are the biggest barriers to change if we do not personally address racial injustice in our Air Force. Defensiveness is a predictable response by white people to any discussion of racial injustice. White colonels are no exception. We are largely blind to institutional racism, and we take offense to any suggestion that our system advantaged us at the expense of others. If we do not take the time to learn, to show humility, to address our blind spots around race, and to agree that we are not as objective as we think, and our system is not as fair as we think, then our Air Force will not rise above George Floyd's murder. But we can rise above it. We can break these invisible barriers if we choose to engage and stop excusing ourselves, end quote. I'm not a militarist, but I salute Colonel Johnson. Sounds like a good man. In Yiddish, we would say a mensch, a good person. And he really believes in justice. There's nothing wrong with it. But Eric Schmidt, you know, again, had to appease the bigots. And this is not the first time that Senator Eric Schmidt's done this, all right? While he was running for office, there's a piece from KRCG-TV where the NAACP slams Eric Schmidt's Jim Crow-style ad, and this was in November of 2022, and I call it the racism of Eric Schmidt. And according to this, you know, this was during the election, quote, the president of the Missouri Conference of the NAACP Friday issued a withering statement decrying a series of ads from Attorney General Eric Schmidt's Senate campaign, calling them, quote, downright racist, plain as day, end quote. A statement came from Mr. Nimrod Chappelle, who I know he's a wonderful, wonderful person. And the ads were about police and crime, and they featured black elected officials. Mr. Chappelle said, quote, if the ads were simply about police funding, they would also include prominent white political leaders. Quote, by no accident, he's turned to page one of an old and super tired playbook on Jim Crow-style racist political ads and maligned black leaders in order to try and scare white voters. It reeks of desperation and is beneath the dignity of the office Eric Schmidt seeks, end quote. And the statement also accused Schmidt of racism when it came to, you know, doling out justice when he served as Attorney General. And that was regarding Schmidt's opposition to the release from prison of Lamar Johnson and Kevin Strickland. They were both men were eventually released after prosecutors said they were wrongfully convicted. Okay. So Chappelle went on to say, quote, the Missouri NAACP in the strongest terms possible fully condemns Attorney General Eric Schmidt's racist TV ads, his disturbing pattern of hateful disregard for justice and equality, and using racist attitudes towards black people to advance his political future, end quote. And according to the article, Schmidt's campaign wasn't responding to a request for comment. In all fairness, in terms of the Jackass of the Week Award, I did call Eric Schmidt's office in D.C. His people almost never answer the phone, okay? I tried calling his federal office in St. Louis, same thing. You always get the machine. It's rare that you get a person. And, you know, here in Missouri, that's pretty common. Okay, you know, Eric Schmidt was playing to the racist rural voters and also racist in the more segregated areas of St. Louis County. New Missouri is a highly segregated state and segregated by housing patterns still. Make no mistake about it. And so for this, and again, to hold up the promotion of this colonel is absolutely outrageous. And keep in mind, Schmidt himself never served in the military. He's too cowardly. So for that and for so many other reasons, what can I say? Senator Eric Schmidt is awarded our Jackass of the Week Award and our Deplorable of the Week Award. It's a twofer. Pray on, you dumb Republican jackass. Pray on. Okay. And we're almost done here now. Okay, so like I promised, we have two Randy Rainbow videos. You can at least hear the music. Okay, give me a second. So the first one is a parody of a song in the Beatles style, Listen, Do You Want to, it's called Listen, Do You Want to Buy Top Secrets? Here we go.
You'll never know how much I tried to drift you. You'll never know how I'm your worst nightmare. Listen. Do you want to buy top secrets? Do you promise not to tell? Traitor. I have got some folders here. A few White House souvenirs. I've got stuff for you. Oh, believe me, they're the very best top secrets. I'll throw ketchup in as well. I'm a poser. Donate to my causes here. Presidential racketeer. I'm in love with me.
Okay, and we have one more. That was a short one. That's why we have a twofer. This one is the founder sings, not Randy Rainbow, I Won't Survive, It's Classified, about Jack Smith.
a box labeled classified. Kept thinking I could show it off and they just let it slide. But then some jerk up in D.C. realized that they were gone. I said, you're wrong. Cause they've been mine all along, but now there's Jack. Back from the Hague. He's as relentless as a bloodhound and as deadly as the plague. I should have chained us to the lock and caused a fire or a flood. Now the feds have reindicted me. The Dems are smelling blood. My lawyers quit. Walked out the door. Please turn around now, cause I won't pay for anymore. Thank God the GOP is rushing to my side. There's a few though who hope I lay down and die as classified. I won't survive. They got evidence like tapes and texts. They won't believe my lies. Yeah, the feds are on my ass and my friends are flipping fast. It's classified. I won't survive. Hey, hey. Well, I'll spend every minute left in my gold golf cards. Ask those suckers for donations, yeah, I'll squeeze them hard. And I'll spend oh so many nights raging at somebody else. If I was president, then I could pardon myself. Now look at me, I always lose. I'm not that puff of orange blob who used to dance for you. So if you feel a little bitty, send a dollar, maybe five. Don't make me cry. Don't let me lay down and die and classify. I won't survive. They got evidence like tapes and texts. They won't believe my lies. Yeah, the feds are on my ass and my friends are flipping fast. It's classified. I won't survive. Hey, hey.
Okay. So, that's our show for today. I hope you learned something. I know a lot of it sounded convoluted because, again, when you're dealing with the Supreme Court, nothing's ever simple. You know, it's bad enough that we have criminals in the Republican Party that are senators and representatives. But when we have criminals on the Supreme Court, enough's enough. You know, and for the three liberals to take the cowardly approach they did, I just wonder, are they being threatened? I mean, do they need protection? What's going on here? Because they're not being guardians of the Constitution. That, you know, their response was weak sauce. And every justice should be forced to sign off on that decision. We need to know who said what. We have a right to know. I don't care if you don't like Joe Biden. I'm not crazy about him either. Although, during the State of the Union, he showed some fire. He did. And it was about damn time. I will vote for anything or anybody against Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a traitor. Make no mistake about it. The Republican Party is led by Trump. They are traitors and cowards. And this election is about whether or not any semblance of democracy remains. Period. Show up. Make sure you're registered and vote, damn it. And to those of you on the left that go, well, I want somebody else, grow the F up already. Seriously. This is not the time for that. Because I guarantee you, Donald Trump and his neo-Nazis will not entertain debates from you. They just won't. And if you think, well, you can win over some Trumpers, no, you can't. It is shameful, but we need to admit one very shameful fact. That close to half of this nation's population likes Nazis. Get rid of your delusions about the American people. Half of them, yes, are willing fascists. And we have to stand up to them. We just do. Show up, vote against Trump. We can have these other arguments afterwards. Period. And those of you that are millennials or Gen Z, you don't want to vote, you know what? If you don't vote against Trump, then you deserve whatever happens to you. Seriously. There's an old saying, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. And I'm tired of hearing these silly arguments. This is time. This vote is a vote against Trump, a vote against Nazism. It is that simple. Now, next week, we're going to have a different show, a little more analysis. You can check out my writing. All you have to do is Google my name, Janine Maloff. You'll find my old writing from Huffington Post. You'll also find my writings at Nation of Change, Eurasia Review, some from Newsbreak, although I'm leaving Newsbreak. I don't like being censored. So anyway, I hope you learned something. And, you know, with that, I say good night and bless us, because we're going to need it. Keep up the fight.